Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 43. The Steelers get through the bye week. And Dave, not only to get through the bye week, I mean, I know people don't like to jump ahead and don't want to hear, you know, putting things in the bank before the check is actually cashed. But I'll tell you, the AFC North is done. It's finite. It is over. The Bengals and the Ravens lose yesterday, as we talked about on Friday. Both underdogs. Really, you know, another poor offensive showing from the Bengals. The Ravens not a much better. And they both have five losses now, with the Steelers only having two. I just don't see the scenario.
Boy, it had to be a heck of a collapse, and you would think it would have to be injury related at that, you know, heavily injury related at that, for the Steelers, you know, to not win the division right now. And yeah, the Ravens, boy, they, you know, they can't do anything right offensively. And really the same goes for the Bengals at this point. If you watched either one of those two games yesterday, yeah, the Bengals win against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Then boy, I don't know if it's just quality of competition or what, but boy, that I don't think the Steelers should be, or fans should be, hanging their heads, you know, with that loss to the Jaguars earlier in the season, because that defense really, really is the real thing at this point. Now, the Ravens lost to the Titans. You know, this is a Ravens offense that's been, you know, real team in general that's been killed by injuries all season. I think you're really, really seeing it in that aspect. Now, Joe Flacco threw a couple interceptions. One went off the hands of wide receiver Breshad Perriman, who, by the way, man, you want to talk about a Jarvis Jones type bust, if you will. That's Perriman, and you know, the former first rounder of the Ravens. There, he can't stay healthy, and he can't catch anything when it's thrown to him. But if you're a Steelers fan, you know, outside of what you think about, you know, which way the Cowboys and Texans game should have went, you know, some people will say it would have helped the Titans or the Chiefs to stay up there in competition for that number one seed. Others, not so much. I personally think the Chiefs still have another loss or two ahead of them the rest of the way. But regardless, it was a good bye week to be a Steelers fan.
Yeah, I like that you said, you know, a little intestinal digestive problem for Tom Brady, and it would be the ideal weekend. It really, it couldn't have gone a whole lot better. And you know, again, cart before the horse and all the caveats that go, the Steelers are in a great position to have a bye the opening week of the playoffs. And obviously they get to play the Patriots here down the road. So, you know, if they go 6-2, maybe 12-4 does it, but that head-to-head matchup is certainly good matter. The Patriots are going to have some tough games along the way. We saw, you know, the Bills take a big step back in the game on Thursday night that we talked about, but maybe that makes the Jets game tougher. The East, again, you know, it doesn't look like there's a strong team in the East, but maybe nobody's, well, depending on what you think of the Dolphins, nobody's pathetic. But the Steelers are in grand fashion to make the playoffs and certainly play at least their first playoff game at home as things stand now. So, Dave, just other things around the NFL. In your mind, you know, we talked a lot about that. On Friday, we went through our playoff choices. And just sticking with the AFC for a second, is it the Steelers and the Patriots kind of – is it fair to say now head and shoulders above anybody else? And if you wanted to throw the Chiefs in there, is there a fourth team to even talk about?
Boy, I don't see it, right? I mean, to me, it's the Patriots and the Steelers. I think, look, I mean, there's no denying what the Chiefs have done early in the season has been impressive, but – You know, we talked the other day about Kareem Hunt, whether or not he's a shoe-in to get this rookie of the offensive rookie of the year. David, have you seen what he's done over the course of the last four games, and you know, or maybe even farther than that, though? You're starting with the one, I think, who was it against, the Texans? I'm forgetting, ahead of their game against the Steelers. He hasn't done jack squat, to be quite honest with you, in the last four or five games. And, you know, sure, he's caught a few passes here, and yeah, he's had some long runs, but right now he seems to be a home run or nothing kind of guy. And really, you know, that's Jay Ajayi, if you ask me. But
home runs aren't bad, man. If you're busting off 35 or 50 yard runs, you know, once a week and getting a touchdown or two, those are, you know, let's not discount home runs.
No, I'm not discounting them, but you definitely would like to have more down to down consistency with him than what you're getting, I think. And you know, when's the last time he really broke a home run anyway? I mean, go back and look. I mean, his top five runs, I think, constitute something around 25 to 28% of his total yards on the ground this year. So, you know, he's not as good of a down to down runner as he was made out to be earlier in the season, I don't think. And back to the Chiefs as a whole, decent defense. They obviously have some weapons on offense there, but you know, they've lost what, three of their last four games now? And like I said, I think they're going to lose a few more. And I mean, who else in the AFC? I mean, it's not going to be the Raiders. I mean, even if the Raiders make the playoffs, I just don't see them going very far. You know, Buffalo.
We saw with the Texans that, you know, they were maybe in the conversation with Deshaun Watson. I watched a lot of that game yesterday. Tom Savage was, you know, I hate to say horrible, but he was. So they're out of it. I mean, I guess we can put the Jags in the conversation because of what they can do defensively. And, you know, the Bills, my whole view on the Bills changed on that Jets game. Maybe that's too strong, but I don't know. All of a sudden, is Josh McCown a serviceable enough quarterback that the Jets' defense is good enough that they can be? You know, none of these teams are, you know, we're trying to find excuses to put them in a conversation. The Jags is the only one that, you know, can maybe win a game because their defense is good enough.
Maybe the Titans. Maybe we should be start talking a little bit more about the Titans here, you know.
Mario played better. Corey Davis came back yesterday, and he made a great catch on the sideline. You know, he was the number 5 overall pick, for those who don't remember, the first receiver taken in the draft. If he comes back and opens that offense up a little bit, they do have two backs, that are capable. Maybe that's the sleeper team. One of those teams will win the division. One will be the wild card now. So, man, there's not a lot there.
I mean, if you put your money down right now, you would think one of the three teams, the Patriots, the Steelers, or the Chiefs are going to be in the Super Bowl. I mean, you'd be foolish not to, you know.
Absolutely. I guess, you know, I'll tell you, if the Jags and the Chiefs would be an interesting game. Those two, because, you know, one's more explosive on one side of the ball, and that matches up with the other team's explosiveness as well. The Chiefs offense against the Jags defense. So, yeah, I'm with you. That's how I would bet as well. How about let's talk about while we're on it. Let's talk about the brawl yesterday. It seemed to be a little WWF breaking out in the NFL. And the first one was AJ Green and Jalen Ramsey. And I'm sure everybody's seen the videos. If you haven't, Dave's got them up on his Twitter feed, and I do too. And you can find it, you know, you can find it anywhere you want. But the gist of it is, and from hearing the official who talked to the pool of reporters after the game, said Ramsey was the instigator, apparently, in terms of being the guy who was mouthing off and maybe kind of after the whistle jostling stuff. And if you saw what happened, it was a non-event play where Ramsey kind of, you know, with no provocation, pushed A.J. Green to the ground. Now, A.J. Green got up and put a whooping on him, put a chokehold and body slammed him. And so if you just look at that in the context of what happened, obviously A.J. Green escalated a non-event or a minor event to something huge. But now there's a little background from the official. Dave, level of shock, does this reflect at all on the Bengals and Marvin Lewis as a team? And what are the ramifications of what happened?
Sure, it reflects on Marvin, especially all the things that have happened there, right? I mean, Look, I don't hate Jalen Ramsey for what he did. If the referees want to get a better handle on it, they should have flagged. You know, if they felt the chippiness was escalating, if you will, flag should have been thrown up in the air right when Jalen Ramsey, you know, kind of shoved AJ Green, and AJ Green's got to be a better, you know, got to be above that. And, you know, instead of taking matters in his own hand, and boy, that, you know, you want to talk about uncharacteristic. That looked like weeks worth of frustration right there, boiling over for AJ Green, and now he's got himself in a situation where, it's plausible where he could possibly get sat down this next week. I mean, he's really kind of a first offense type guy, so I guess some might be shocked if he is sat down, but I think it's possible. And if that happens, boy, the Bengals are in a situation right now where they can't afford to lose any more games, and they have to play the Titans this next week in a game that could really have some playoff implications down the road. And to think of them possibly not having AJ Green for that game, shame on him. And you can't help but think, as patient as Mike Brown's been with Marvin over the years, you really have to think that it might be coming to an end here very soon.
I'm with you. The Bengals are done. Their season's over. AJ Green, we didn't tie the loose ends. They tied it up on the broadcast last night. Luke Kuechly did not get suspended and only fined $9,000 for the hit on Joe Flacco. That, you know, you saw the Twitter moral outrage about how Luke Kuechly should go to prison for a couple years.
No,
for that hit on Flacco.
Kiko.
Kiko Alonso. Kiko Alonso should go to prison for a few years for the hit on Joe Flacco, where his helmet came off and he was put in concussion protocol, and you know how that all played out. The league looked at it the way Dave and I looked at it, and a lot of people looked at it. Is Joe Flacco was going for the first down. Alonso can't be expected to, you know, stop himself in midair. The point being, Kiko Alonso had no past history, so he didn't get suspended. The fine was his first offense fine. So A.J. Green has that past history. Now, A.J. Green is certainly guilty of the transgression. You know, they decided Kuechly, maybe not it was a football play, obviously, in the action, and you decide what the thing is. This is outside of the game of football, so it will be very interesting. But I'm with you also, Dave. I think Mike Brown's done. I thought the Indianapolis game last week, if they had lost, would have at least put the final nail in the coffin. And this Tennessee game, if it's not already in, that'll be it, because I think they're going to lose this week. In the NFC, you had a divisional game that tempers got heated. Talk about a team that looks like they might be ready to boil over. The Tampa Bay Bucs, a lot of people's dark horse, with Dirk Cutter in there in his second year as the offense, from offensive coordinator, QB coach to head coach, taking over for Lovie Smith. A team with some talent. Jameis Winston gets some weapons with DeSean Jackson. Doug Martin comes back, and they've been putrid with Winston being hurt. And Mike Evans takes a shot at the guy I mentioned on Friday, I think will be the defensive rookie of the year, Marshon Lattimore, just out of the blue, hits him in the back. So who got the better shot in, first of all, Dave? Mike Evans, the cheapie in the back, or A.J. Green walking up behind and putting the chokehold body slam on Jalen Ramsey? Who got the better WWF shot in?
I think Mike Evans got more money's worth. that's the one that more likely to leave the mark right there, right? I mean, punching a guy in the helmet's pretty stupid, if you ask me. What is up with the Buccaneers? I mean, is Jameis Winston going to be worth his salt? You know, he sure seems. I mean, I don't know if he's going to make it, David. I really don't.
He's got to get healthy. I mean, they might as well sit him for a while now. I mean, you don't want to have a situation, you know, who knows what the deal with Andrew Luck and whatever. You know, you've got top of the draft quarterbacks, and we've seen a lot of them in the past couple of years. Andrew Luck's hardly played, you know, obviously hadn't played at all this year. He's had his fair share of injuries. All the talk this year about Carson Wentz and about Deshaun Watson, Jared Goff's a little hold my beer moment the past couple of weeks, as he's put up huge numbers and is playing great right now. That's a sleeper team. So let's go talk about the NFC. clearly the Eagles with the let's do the last thing on the Broncos. Are they done? Because we didn't mention them. Are they just their quarterback play has been terrible, and their defense gave up 51 yesterday. Are they finished?
Oh, yeah, they're done. They're just waiting to get Kirk Cousins next offseason.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins. We'll get into Kirk as well. Okay, so on the other side, we saw the Eagles take apart the Broncos. There are 3-2 loss teams in the NFC. Tell me whether you think they're for real. They're all 6-2. The Vikings, are they for real?
Yeah, I think they are, David. I think they've got a good enough defense, and I think whatever combination of quarterback that they can throw out there, we'll see what happens with Bridgewater. Obviously, Sam Bradford was playing good before he went down, and Case Keenum is just maybe a step above Blake Bortles right now, but you know you can put him in situations where he won't lose you the game, maybe. So, I mean, they would cut. You know, they would be obviously a little bit of a dark horse, but I think they're going to be around come playoff time, obviously.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And I think, you know, one of the things that is frustrating on Twitter for me is when you talk about players. And there's two things to talk about players. One is to talk about a player in the big picture, as we do with Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger just got 2 Super Bowls. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's played in 3. We all know who Ben Roethlisberger is. His career legacy is pretty much written. You can only add to it. That doesn't mean at a moment in time he can't be not playing well. And right now he's not playing well. And it frustrates me when you talk about a guy like Kirk Cousins or you talk about a guy like Case Keenum. And people know Case Keenum's pedigree, they know, or lack thereof, they know some of his failures in the past, and they say Case Keenum stinks. Well, you know, if you watch Case Keenum play this year, he doesn't stink. You know, he played against the Steelers, and they weren't particularly effective offensively, but Dave and I talked about the characteristics that he showed. He didn't have one of his better receivers. He was getting killed in the pocket, but he stood in and he made the throws. And, you know, we've seen this repeatedly now. And Josh McCown's doing the same thing for the Jets. He is throwing a good ball when he has time. That offense has been really productive. And I'm with you. So the Vikings, yeah, they're for real. Are the Saints for real?
Anytime you have a quarterback, right, you're for real.
Yeah.
And they have a quarterback. They got a nice, decent 1-2 punch with Kamara and Ingram. Their offensive line, I don't think's great. They got some serviceable pass weapons, and their defense has come around. Boy, remember the first couple of weeks of the season, their defense was horrible, and now their defense is coming around. It's getting to the point where people won't even throw it. Lattimore over there on the other side right now. When you look at that division that they're in specifically, I think they're a better team than Carolina is right now. What the Falcons? What's up with that offense? All of a sudden, I think you're going to have 2 teams come out of that division, and I think New Orleans quite possibly could be one of them.
I think they'll be one of them. And Dave, just as to your point on the defense, only 2 teams in the NFC have given up fewer points than the Saints defensively, and it's the Vikings and the Seahawks. And we think of them as probably the 2 best defensive teams in that conference. So I totally agree. Great point there. And now the Rams are 6-2. Are they for real?
Their defense is, once again, I mean, Wade, I hope Wade Phillips writes a ton of books when he walks away from this game, David. I really, really do. You want to talk about a guy, and I used to make fun of Wade Phillips years ago back, you know, the Cowboys days and all like that, but I got a lot of respect for what he can do. And remember, he's doing this with personnel that was kind of originally built for 4-3, right? I mean, he's come in and yep. You know, he's putting square pegs in round holes, and he's doing a good job of it right now. And then there's the offense. What McVay's been able to do there, the creativeness, being able to work around what Goff does extremely well. Anytime you got a running back that can run like Todd Gurley, that's going to give you something. So, yeah, I think this is another team that if they don't win that division, you know, They could be 1 or 2. They're going to be in the playoffs, I think. It would take a total collapse for them not to be. It just depends on, are they going to be a wild card or are they going to be a division winner? Push comes to shove, though, I don't consider them a legitimate candidate to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. Not yet. Maybe next year.
Yeah, I'm, you know, surprisingly, I'm leaning that way because I think that the two displaced Buffalo receivers in Watkins and Woods have been good. Tavon Austin is he's not quite Tyreek Hill, but ideally, if you can use him in the same way as Tyreek Hill, he can be very dangerous for you. So I'm beginning to, you know, I watched a lot of them yesterday as well, and I'm coming around on them because I think Jared Goff is good. I mean, he threw a great deep ball to Sammy in that game yesterday, just hit him 63 yards in the air, I think, or 62 yards in the air, just hit him dead on stride. They look good. So let me ask you again, the Seahawks lose to the Skins. Carolina sneaked out a victory over Atlanta. The Packers didn't play. The Cowboys beat the Chiefs. All of a sudden, it's flipped in my view. I thought early in the season it was that the NFC was a little top-heavy and the AFC was the really deep conference. Well, clearly the AFC is small top-heavy, and the NFC really might be the deep conference because the Ezekiel Elliott back, the Cowboys win, the Redskins win on the road in Seattle. Seems to be a lot of decent teams in the NFC, and we didn't even mention the Lions, who you and I both like, who play tonight.
Yeah, and if the Lions take boy, how big is this game tonight for the Lions? A game that they obviously have to win, a game that they should win, being as how Aaron
Rodgers. Right, I mean, this is massive for both teams.
Yeah, if Green Bay does win this one, I don't see them hanging around anyway, to be quite honest with you, because of the quarterback situation. This is a game that the Lions need to win handily, and they got to roll together a few more. You know, I think there's an outside chance that, you know, once again, them in Minnesota, I mean, you can only have you know, there's only six teams. You're going to have four division winners, and you're going to have two wild cards. It should be a fun wild card race the rest of the way. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think there's more teams in the NFC that we'll be talking about hanging around longer than maybe teams in the AFC.
Bigger disappointment in the NFC, the Giants or the Falcons?
I had the Giants. I got to admit, I had the Giants winning their division. Of course, the injuries play, you know, hurt. But even without those injuries, I'm not sure that they would have done what I thought they should have done. So, I don't know. Falcons offense, what is up with that? I mean, Sarkisian. I mean, you can notice the drop-off between Shanahan and Steve Sarkisian. No real pieces have changed on offense for them, right? I mean.
Nope. Same guys.
I mean, just not getting it done.
Is there anybody? I mean, maybe people in Baltimore or Cincinnati would think that they're in the conversation. Does anybody challenge the disappointment of the Broncos in the AFC?
Look, I mean, they've got you know, we went into this season though they might have quarterback issues, right? I mean, didn't know for sure if Trevor Siemian is that guy or not.
I mean, they were 3-1, and people were pretty happy with them, but they've lost four in a row.
Right, and they're going to lose more before the season's over. So.
All right. Okay, so there's our book on us getting to watch some the rest of the league, taking another look around as we did on Friday. Dave, the Steelers just they'll get back at it. They're back in the building today. Get up this week. We talked about Cameron Sutton being back last week. We'll see what kind of progress he has. I don't think either of us expect him to be added to the 53 this week. They'll probably take as long as they can, barring some kind of injury where he's needed. But a small roster move today?
Yeah, practice squad move. They signed wide receiver Justin Thomas back to the practice squad again, and they released tackle Jake Rogers, who had been back with the team since the middle of October. This is obviously a sign that Marcus Gilbert should be good to go in practice this week, and you know, one would think that this is the week that we'll see Marcus Gilbert back on the field at starting right tackle, and here's the hope, and he stays around the rest of the year for sure. So that's a good sign there when it comes to a practice squad move. We'll see what we would think that Stephon Tuitt will be back this week from his back injury, and we would think that Vance McDonald potentially will return back from his knee bruise that Mike Tomlin said he had as well. This could, if there's ever a week, we've been talking about it for several weeks, and someone keeps moving one of the pieces on us here, but this actually could be the week that we see all kind of preseason predicted
top 22 guys all healthy and on the field at one time. So wouldn't that be a sight for sore eyes? And you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, how much playing time a guy like McDonald maybe gets over Jesse James. But obviously, this team, the bye week came at, you couldn't have planned it to come at a better time, I don't think.
Yeah, the as you mentioned, I don't know how many teams in the NFL get a chance in Week 10 to have as healthy a team as it looks like the Steelers might have coming into Week 10 here. We'll see what happens with Mike Mitchell, a little dinged up in that Detroit game. But you would think there are no serious injuries right now, and we'll see how it plays out. Okay, Dave, I talked last week about kind of evaluating the Steelers' performance at the halfway mark, and this is a good opportunity for us. And I don't know if we'll get to both sides of the ball today because we want to get to more reader emails, and we'll do that today, and we'll do some more of that Wednesday as well. But you want to start with the offense or you want to start with the defense?
Let's start with the offense.
Okay. I don't want to start with the quarterback position. Let's save that for last. Let's start with the offensive line. And the way I'd like to do it, if it's okay with you, is, you know, putting letter grades or putting number grades on things is always, you know, all of this is to a degree subjective. But the way I want to do it is I want your opinion, and I'll give you mine on not necessarily just how the Steelers have performed, these individuals in these units, but how they've performed versus your expectation coming into the season. Have they lived up to, and look, we both called them to be in the AFC Championship game, if not further. So expectations are high. So underperforming expectations doesn't necessarily mean they were awful or even that they were below NFL average. It's just expectations for certain players and in groups is pretty high with this team. So let's do it that way. Let's start with the offensive line. And what are your thoughts on this group with, you know, five guys under contract that have been together for a couple years now? Mike Munchak has gotten he flies a bit under the radar, but I think everybody around the NFL who knows football knows that what he's brought to this group and the performance they've had. What do you think of the O-line?
I think it's lived up right at to expectations. I mean, we expected this offensive line to be good. We expected them to rival what they did last year in regards to sacks allowed, and they're doing a good job there. The run blocking at times have been fantastic, especially when they've used people on the move. Yes, they have not had Marcus Gilbert, so that makes it kind of tough to evaluate. But Hubbard, let's face it, Hubbard is what we thought he would be, a better run blocker than he is a pass protector. So just because he's had some issues in the pass protection department doesn't mean that wasn't expected. So I would say as expected with that position group.
I agree. And I think we look at David DeCastro back to being 2015 David DeCastro. You know, it's often when you have a guy who is plays at not just a pro, but I like to always make the distinction between Pro Bowl, which a lot of guys go to the Pro Bowl, and with injuries and the way things are set up without the Super Bowl teams being involved, there are a lot of extra guys who go to the Pro Bowl. So, you know, you don't always have the elite of the elite. All pros is a completely different thing. And David DeCastro has been at that level. And once you get there, sometimes as an offensive lineman, you get there based on reputation as opposed to merit. He took a bit of a step back last year, and I think we've seen the best. And some, you know, so I would suggest maybe the best guard play we've seen since Alan Faneca, which is, you know, Hall of Fame type level guard play. DeCastro this year, absolutely, you know, mauling people. The guy who I think is flown under the radar a bit and doesn't get talked about a lot, Dave, is Maurkice Pouncey. And people talk – when they talk about him, they talk about his mobility and his ability to get to the edge, which is rare in an NFL center, either A, offensive coordinators calling that type of stuff, and B, actually being able to go out and do it. Anything to add on any of the individuals aside from what you threw in there already?
No, you know, look, Maurkice Pouncey is a guy you expect to be able to get to the second level. We still see him miss at times – getting to the middle of the field second level. I mean, sometimes he's in such a hurry to get there, he gets himself out of control, I think, I think, and he misses some blocks. He's far more accurate, it seems, when he does pull out or around the edge there. But I mean, that's not a knock on him. It's just, I mean, it's the player that he is, and overall he's been reliable in pass protection. Ramon Foster is a guy that continues to be the under the radar guy, the guy that just, you know, he'll deliver you a pancake or two every game, and he's generally very reliable in pass protection. And he just gets it done, and he's the less athletic one of the group. But, I mean, look, you still have to look at the potential of him possibly playing one more season. But, I mean, with that contract and all, even though it's not a ton, and with B.J. Finney being a much cheaper option down there, we'll see. But I think Foster remains the most underrated one of the group.
I was going to ask you exactly that question, because if you had asked me at the beginning of the year, I would have said Ramon Foster won't be the starting left guard in 2018 because he won't be with the team. He's due to make 2.6. He's going to have cap hit will be 3.6 next year. And I would change my opinion now and suggest that he will get to play that last year out because he's been so solid. But you're right, they have a cheaper option. Finney's going to be with the team. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Okay.
Well, look at it this way. If they kept Arthur Motes around at what they paid him this year, then just because Foster set to make 2.675 in 2018, you could make, you know, let him play it out as far as I'm concerned right now, barring any kind of, you know, serious injury right now.
Okay, tight end. And boy, has this position the last 2 years been a bit of upheaval when Heath Miller retired. And, you know, the Steelers draft Jesse James. They bring him in. They try it with Ladarius Green, who, when he was on the field, was probably exactly what they hoped. Wasn't on the field much. They bring David Johnson back. He doesn't make it out of camp. David Grimble's been a guy who probably hasn't achieved what his physical skills suggest. He's still a young guy learning the system, but he hasn't been able to make much headway on the depth chart or in the snaps department. So they go and find Vance McDonald after Mike Tomlin calls the position a JV position. Well, with that, knowing that it's a JV position, expectations aren't very high. Dave, I'm going to say as a group for me, this unit this year is slightly below expectation. Now, Vance McDonald in the run blocking has been very good, and we've talked about it, and you've put a bunch of GIFs up on the site, and there's no doubt that he has been a good addition to what the Steelers want to do. They just haven't done enough in the passing game overall for me to say it's reached expectations. My expectations aren't that high. And, you know, always with that goes some quarterback play plays into some of that. But I need a little bit more offensively from the group. And Jesse James is an ideal number two tight end. And we've talked about, you know, is that going to change here? But I would just say slightly below expectation.
I'm going to go on the other end of the spectrum here. Look, is Jesse James the player that we thought he was after last season? And I think the answer to that is yes. A guy that's a number two, a guy that's going to have issues, I think, forever with some blocks, especially when not asked to be on the move. He gives you what he's always given you kind of in the passing game, which is, you know, just enough. You know, I think he's not a yards after the catch type guy, not a huge average yards per catch type guy, that kind of thing. So he's kind of status quo. And then it comes to, I think, Xavier Grimble, what were you expecting out of him? Obviously not much, especially since Vance McDonald was added. So that's kind of a wash there.
I expected a little bit out of the passing game out of Xavier Grimble. We saw a little bit last year, and we haven't seen
not since, you know, I don't think we should have once Vance McDonald was added, you know. So that's why I have it. Okay, it's a wash with Grimble. So then it becomes, where is McDonald? Is McDonald slightly more of a better all around player than what we thought he would might be? Look, I mean, there's no doubt if you looked at his tape prior to him signing, or when he signed with the Steelers, we knew there were going to be issues with some drop footballs, okay? And that's been the case. We knew he would be able to get some separation down the field and make a big catch or two. That has been the case. We'd probably like to see about three or four more of those than what we've seen. But I think on average, both those areas of his game have been as expected. All right, so then it comes to the blocking aspect. Did any of us really know that he would be as good of a blocker as he's been in Pittsburgh? And I don't think anybody can answer that question and say, oh yeah, we thought he would be this good. Now, granted, he's not going to the Pro Bowl, but I've been far more impressed with what I originally observed on tape with him as a blocker. So I think as a whole, because of that, I think the tight end position is slightly, ever so slightly, better than what maybe we thought it was initially, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I've always been a little bit higher on Grimble in terms of what I hope from him, maybe more than what I expect from him. And that probably plays into a little bit of my assessment versus where you are. Running back. Now, this is an interesting evaluation, I think, because Le'Veon Bell's been a workhorse, and after a slow start to the season, he has been exceptionally good. One thing to realize is over the past 2 years and 374 carries, Le'Veon Bell averaged 4.9 yards a carry. And in his 194 carries so far this year, he's averaging 3.9 yards a carry. Receiving last year averaged 8.2 yards a carry. He's averaging 6.3 yards a carry. But Dave, even though the numbers, the averages and stuff are down, I'm going to give Le'Veon Bell, I don't want to say I'm giving him a pass, because Le'Veon Bell, I do think, is the best back in football. He may not be the best pure runner. He may not be the best pure receiver, but he's the best back when you put in pass protection and the other things, the things that he can do and what defenses have to think about. There's no doubt in my mind he's the best back in football. I'm going to say he's as expected, and that pretty much covers the running backs. Now, having said that, I think we said at the beginning of the year we expected James Conner to have roughly 50 touches over the course of the season, maybe 3 to 5 a game. And when James Conner's gotten the ball, there's no doubt that he's run hard and he's run, you know, reasonably effectively. Problem is, James Conner isn't really, you know, getting the ball very often. And we've seen Watson get, I think, his 4 carries as a third down back, fourth down back, short yardage back, whatever you want to call it. So I'm going to say as expected for the backs. I know the numbers aren't quite as good with Le'Veon Bell, but he's still, to me, the most dynamic guy. And I think he's doing what the Steelers need him to do.
I'll say slightly below expectations and throw out his, I don't like to look at the average yards per carry. I like to look at success rates, and his success rates are a little lower than what I thought they would be this time of year. So I'm judging it solely on that. Roosevelt Nix has been the guy we thought he would be. James Conner, not enough there, but went in there. I mean, outside of some pass protection issues, which, you know, probably to be expected with him as well, and that's what's not allowing him to get on the field as much as probably he would like and others would like him to be on the field. I just think there's, you know, just a little less than what was been desired out of Le'Veon Bell. It's not off by much. It's just off, and I thought the running game would be a little bit better than what it is right now, midway point of the season.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, fair assessment. We didn't really put Rosie in the tight end or the running back category, and Rosie's probably been exactly what we thought he'd be. Maybe had his worst game of the season in that Lions game, but an effective lead blocker when called upon. Wide receiver. I'm going to let you tee this one up. Obviously, Antonio Brown's numbers are kind of the numbers that we expect from Antonio Brown. The rest of them, probably nobody's been exactly as expected. So how do you look at him as a group?
Yeah, I think you got to be a little disappointed disappointed with the group overall, what we've seen so far. You know, Martavis Bryant, for whatever reason, is not on the same page with Ben Roethlisberger as far as the deep ball goes, and that's really been the difference in several of these games, I think. I mean, if you connect in that deep pass against the Bears early on, that changed the whole complexion, I think, of that game. In their game against against the Jaguars, probably the same thing. If you hit a couple of deep passes early on in that game, maybe a little different story there. You know, who else? I mean, Juju has what you have gotten out of Juju exceeded expectations enough to offset what Martavis hasn't given you and what guys like Eli Rogers haven't given you, and, you know, in his few snaps, a guy like Justin Hunter hasn't given you. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Juju's a great story right now. He most certainly is, and he's helped pick up some of the slack. But I think because of not having the deep ball effectiveness with Bryant, or especially early on in the season, you have to be a little less happy with what you've gotten out of receiving group as a whole through the first half of the season.
I'm dead on with all of that. AB's been AB. You know, look. Julio Jones dropped the touchdown pass in the end zone yesterday, and there are a lot of people who want to use that as a referendum on who's the best receiver in the NFL. Look, receivers drop balls. You ideally don't want to be dropping balls in big moments like that. It might have cost the Falcons the game. But AB has been – I mean, the catches he makes once or twice a game on the sideline or in traffic or whatever, it's extraordinary, and we've – It's like watching Sidney Crosby or Mario Lemieux, or, you know, when you watch great skilled athletes put their talents out there week to week or night to night, as the case may be. I don't want to say you get used to it, but sometimes, you know, you need to step back and say, you know, how good are things? And with AB, it's ridiculous how good it is. But you're exactly right, Dave. I mean, Juju had a huge game against Detroit. And I don't want to cherry pick out a game but if you looked at what he did up to that point, it was nothing special. He was coming along nicely, and he had, you know, people will call it a breakout game. He had a big game. We'll see what it leads to. But the rest of the group has been, you know, below pedestrian. I mean, they haven't done anything. Eli's not been a factor. Martavis Bryant's not been a factor. The other two guys, you know, they're not factors. So the Steelers need to find something, and it's by far, obviously it's a tandem between the quarterback and the receiver, but it's by far the biggest thing going on in this second half. They got to figure out how to get this offense going, and that means it's really on Martavis and Juju to be, and Eli to some degree, I guess some lesser degree, to be big parts of this offense. But this group as a whole has underperformed expectations so far. Okay, you go ahead.
I just think the offense as a whole, you know, I mean, look, they moved the football, right, JV? Solve those red zone issues and those third down intermediate areas, and we're talking about a whole different team. You know, look, Ben, there's enough there with Ben that. We should expect that we could see some improvement from the second half of the season to the first half of the season. It's not like we're going to be sitting here saying, well, there was no reason, you know, Ben didn't improve during the second half and we could see that coming. You know, there's been enough good there that, you know, if they solve these red zone issues and some third down issues, and he connects on, you know, one or two more deep balls a game, it's totally different. You know, I think, but I think as a whole, you have to say this offense has not performed as well as we expected it to do in the first eight games.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to add to Ben, let me ask. Look, this is the topic in Pittsburgh, and anybody who's a Steeler fan is Ben. And is this a temporary thing? Are we seeing a overall decline in Ben as a guy? I'll tell you my concerns with Ben. One is this road issue. It's fact. Ben doesn't have an explanation for it. Mike doesn't have an explanation for it. I sure as hell don't have an explanation for it. But it is fact that he hadn't played as well on the road over the past few years. Now, when he's in domes, it seems to be maybe that seems to be mitigated maybe a little bit. But we'll see how that plays out the rest of the year. And it's just something to continue to watch and try and understand, whether it's a comfort level, whether it's the dynamic around the game day activity or whatever it is. It's just reality that he hasn't played as well on the road. So that still exists. So that's point one. Point two is Ben in the pocket and how he's playing the position to me is different now than it was 2 years ago and prior. We don't see Ben climb the pocket much. We see him the positive is and it's the way he's been coached and the way they want to run the offense is he's trying to get the ball out of his hand faster so he doesn't get hit as often. That's a good thing. I think we're all in favor of that. What comes with that is we don't see Ben climb the pocket forward as much as we used to in terms of stepping up and looking to make plays through mobility in the pocket. When we see Ben, we see him get flushed and throw the ball away more than we used to. And again, there's a trade-off that comes with that. You don't get the broken big plays that we think of as Ben Roethlisberger sandlot football as much as we used to. And the positive is he doesn't take as many shots. But I think that overall, that's been a negative. I'd like to see him stand in and stay in the pocket and step up into the pocket a little bit more. And then three, and this is the, you know, if people want to throw darts at me, fire away, because this is the most difficult thing to assess and difficult thing to know if I'm even close to the mark is I don't want to say Ben's regressed in reading defenses. But it just feels like Ben is a first read throw or a pre-snap decision to where he's going to go with the football. And to me, that feels like somewhat of a regression, Dave, versus what we've seen from Ben as he developed as a quarterback over the years. And I know we've talked about this a couple weeks ago on one of the podcasts, and we're, I think, in somewhat of agreement there. It just doesn't seem to me that the progression of reads and the way he's looking at defenses – it seems a little bit different to the negative this year. And, you know, I'm just looking for answers to why things aren't as good. But those are the couple things my assessment of Ben to this point in the season.
Yeah, but, there's definitely been times this year when it looks like he's dead set on going a certain way. Heck, the game against the interception in the game against Detroit, the deep ball a couple of weeks ago down the left side that left him with a grimace on his face that he missed. Brian, it looks like when he sees something, well, even go back to the play that upset Antonio Brown. You know, he saw one thing and he didn't read it all the way through. You know, even though he said he went with what his rules were and going back to the other side, this, that, and the other. But with that,
how about a couple of the crossers like in the Bengals? There are a couple of games where, you know, the Ravens game, was it the kind of short, shallow crosses over the middle where he's eschewed that to go deeper down the field?
Yeah, but I mean, kind of in his defense as well, when has he ever been a guy that, look, if he didn't see a look that he didn't like pre-snap on the outside one-on-one with a single high safety, I mean, you can tell sometimes, regardless of down and distance and where the football's at, Ben loves the deep ball.
I don't have a problem with him throwing the deep ball. It's not play selection.
Ben knows the value of the deep ball and has for many years. The problem is he's just not connecting on them this year. If he had connected on five or six more of these, what kind of conversation would we be having about him right now, I think? I mean, obviously we focus into it more, what do they call it, a recency bias or whatnot, because
it's a season bias. I mean, and we're talking about this season. So, I think it's fair.
You know, but I'm not defending him because, I mean, I'm not trying to totally ignore a lot of what he's done this year. I just think that even though he is, I admit that he's off. I don't think maybe that he's as off as others maybe want to say he is, if that makes sense. Now, he's a middle-of-the-league quarterback right now, without a doubt, okay? I mean, he's a top – what did PFF have him, 13, 14 or whatnot?
Yeah, QBR, he was 13 coming into the week. Yeah, he's right around those levels. Yep.
I mean, that feels right, right? I mean,
it does feel right. 10 to 15.
But on the flip side, I think we've seen him make enough throws here. Here's the thing, when has he ever been a throw a guy open guy anyway?
You know? Never.
Stats say that he's been a little bit more aggressive the last few weeks, so you know that's something we've been on. I mean, we'll see if that continues. I just really think that the two areas, and I wrote about these, I think the past week, you got to connect a little bit higher percentage on these deep balls, which he has coming into this season, and then that third and 3 to 6 yards. If he starts connecting a few more of those and moving the chains, I think maybe we're flipping our look at a few things. Now, I wrote up all of his 9 interceptions this past week, and when you look at them all on one page, David. Once again, I'm not trying to excuse interceptions bad, you know, but when you look at all 9 of them on one post, I mean, look, one of those was against the Ravens. That wasn't an interception. If anything, that's a strip fumble. The one to AB on the crosser that AB quit on the route. You can't put that on Roethlisberger. That was all on AB. James Conner missing pass protection. Okay, the other one in the Jaguars game where the guy comes across and gets the hand up and deflects it. Looks like Roethlisberger just threw it right on the rope to Telvin Smith. Now, he did force the one, and one other one in that game as well, too. Juju gets tripped, okay? That causes that overthrow. That was a gift interception. Who knows how that play ends up if Juju doesn't get tripped. Now, the deep interception to AB in the end zone late in the fourth quarter, that's a quarterback trying to make a play. Okay, put that one on Roethlisberger. The other one to AB that Jalen Ramsey got a hand on, tipped that one up in the air. If that throws lower, at worst, that's an incomplete pass. Okay, so we'll put that one on Ben as well, too. The one against the Lions, that's all on Ben. That's 3 interceptions. The one against the Browns early in the season, middle of the field, just couldn't, you know, Bryant didn't have great interception. Ben tried to put that in a place where you better be perfect on. Bodie Calhoun gets a hand on it, knocks it up in the air for an interception in the end zone. We'll put that one on him. That's 4. What other interceptions has he had, you know?
Well, I mean, the flip side of that is you can look at balls that, you know, could and should have been intercepted.
Sure,
I mean,
yeah, there's sure, sure you can. The one against the one that turned into a touchdown against the Chiefs. I mean, that one should have. Sure, he's had 4 or 5 interceptable balls on top of it. I mean, look, he's not been without fault, okay? But I don't think you can measure up TDs versus interceptions and let that be the end-all, do-all of it right now either.
I agree, but he's been below your – well, I didn't – I'll ask you. So below expectation, at expectation?
Obviously below expectations.
Yeah. Do you think we've seen peak Ben Roethlisberger already? Do you think he'll ever be at his peak again?
Here's the thing. When we're talking about Ben, it's usually Ben doing Ben things, right? I mean, quite honestly, that's just Ben being Ben. Wiping off 3 guys, extending the play for 7 seconds, complete 40 yards down the field. Yeah, I think we've seen peak Ben. I do. But I think we're still dealing with a winnable Ben.
Oh, for sure. I agree with that. Totally. You want to hear an odd stat? Since 2007, and you can really go, you could go further back in this group, but just since 2007, Ben's completion percentage has been above 63% every year of his career, except 2008, win the Super Bowl, he was at 59.9. 2010, get to the Super Bowl and lose at 61.7, and this year at 61.1. I mean, it's a totally random stat, probably meaningless in the big picture, just very odd that his 3 lowest completion percentages – since 2000, basically since the 2006 season, are the 2 years they went to the Super Bowl in this year. I don't know what it says. But somebody can figure it out.
Kind of like UFOs, you just can't explain them. You know they're there. okay, with some questions real quick from Jim Garman. This is another one of those, what's going to happen when Ben retires, assuming Ben retires at the end of the season. He wants us to go through some potential successors, blah, blah, blah. Look, I know everybody looks at Kirk Cousins.
I got started a little bit.
Yeah, and has Kirk Cousins envy, and all like that. Kirk Cousins is a fun guy to watch, and it would be interesting to see him play for the Steelers with the kind of line and quality of receivers that he has. But here's what is going to have to happen for the Steelers to get Cousins. A, Ben's going to have to come out of the season real quick and say, "That's it, I'm done." Okay, because free agency starts in March. Okay,
and he has to let them know in February that it's a firm decision, not coming back.
And then the Steelers are going to have to immediately turn around in March and dole out probably the largest contract for a quarter or largest the most expensive contract in the history of the league, right?
Yeah, you're gonna have to pay him 20. Like maybe he says, "I want to go to Pittsburgh and I'll play for 25 instead of 28. Whatever. You're gonna have to pay him 23 to 28 million bucks a year. You're gonna have to pay him Ben's money.
And I mean,
it's not gonna happen.
And Jim Garman goes on to write, can we write, some other potential successors? No, No, we can't. It's Kirk Cousins or it's nothing, and we don't think Kirk Cousins is going to happen. So,
I'm standing by my view that Ben Roethlisberger will be the Steelers quarterback the next 2 years.
I think at least this next year. I mean, this is a case of we're dealing with Slim and none, and Slim just left. I mean, I understand why people are doing this. Because Ben is on the backside of his career, and even if he does call it quits, I just don't see. I know people don't want to hear this, but I think the Steelers may or may not address the position again in the draft. I'm not convinced they know Joshua Dobbs is, but you have.
Would you take obviously this is, let's say Ben says he's coming back. You got Landry for another year. If Baker Mayfield's on the board in the second year right now, November 5th, 6th, nobody's going to, we're a long way from making any decisions. Gut feel, would you take him in the second round right now?
Man, that's so many hype. Y'all haven't even studied all this. I know who the quarterbacks are, but I haven't studied them, David. I mean.
I would take Baker Mayfield in the second round. I don't think he'll be there.
I'd just be sports
talk radio, man. Talk sport podcast. You're allowed to say things. You don't have to be held to it.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't want to lead people on either. I mean, I know all the top quarterbacks. I haven't watched them. Baker throws a nice deep ball. I'll give him that. I kind of worry about more of his off the field stuff than I do on the field, from what I know about him right now.
Obviously height's an issue. Is he going to check in at 6'1"? Is that, how are people going to feel about that? All right, I'm with you. I think Ben will be the quarterback. I think the quarterbacks on the roster for the 2018 season will be the same three guys who are on the roster right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you as well too. Let's see, JJ. How do you two get together and start the podcast? I think we answered that. Second, I don't live in Pittsburgh, no longer have David Todd show to listen to. Is there another podcast that can keep me updated on Pittsburgh sports? Probably not.
Good answer.
Let's see here from Bill Weaver. Still trying to understand how Dave thinks Cleveland was right in trying to give up a second and a third for AJ, who didn't get drafted until the fifth. Boy, Dak Prescott didn't get drafted until, the fourth? Tom Brady didn't get drafted to the sixth. He hasn't played enough to prove he's a franchise. Sure, he hasn't played enough, but I think in what we have seen out of A.J. McCarron right now, look, it goes back to what I've said all along, Bill. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win in this league. And you're damn sure if you suck at picking quarterbacks the way the Cleveland Browns have for the last several years, why not at least give Hugh Jackson a chance with a guy that he knows and knows well? And that's A.J. McCarron. So what else were you going to do? Are you telling me that you're going to use that second and the third on another player that's going to all of a sudden give you a chance to win a Super Bowl? No. So that's why I said a second or a third for McCarron and see what he can do in a year and a half. That's why I said take that route. Do I think A.J. McCarron is the next whatever, Tom Brady, whatever? Odds tell you no, but can he get them? Can he get them maybe competing in the division again? I think it's a possibility. Will that put butts in seats? I think it will. He says, with that thinking, someone should give the Steelers a second and third for Landry. I didn't say that. I think the main, Bill, if you're listening, which you didn't, the main argument I have here is for a guy like Hugh Jackson, who has already worked with McCarron, that knows what he has to work with there. That's why I say Cleveland should have gave a second and a third for AJ. Let's see here. Boy, this one's long trying to get to here. Shouldn't the Steelers start thinking about how they can start collecting draft picks via trades over the next two seasons to leverage those picks into a move for a quarterback? If so, you can name 3 to 4 current players that can be traded that can bring back enough of that value, that kind of move. You can guarantee the Pats thinking the same exact thing. This from Pete Delagrazi. Pete, Peter, you're out of your ever-loving mind. You play to win now, brother.
And let's remember what the Pats have done. Just remember that, you know, they got Brady in the sixth round. Obviously, that's been their guy. They draft quarterbacks all the time, but you look at it. Jacoby Brissett was a third round pick. Garoppolo was a second round pick. They haven't gone up in the first round and tried to find the successor. And obviously, both those guys are gone now, and their backup's Brian Hoyer. So I'm with Dave. You got to deal with the current situation. Look at Kirk Cousins, somebody's arguing with me on Twitter right now about how awful Kirk Cousins is. Kirk Cousins was a fourth round pick, and that blemishes people's view of what he's capable of what he's done. Drew Brees was the top of the second round pick because he was a shorter guy. Russell Wilson was a third round pick. Yeah, there have been guys at the top of the draft who've been great. There have been guys at the top of the draft who haven't been great. I mean, you look at Winston, Mariota, Goff, and Wentz, and it looks like, you know, all of those are reasonable picks. We'll see if, you know, any of those guys get in the Hall of Fame or get to the playoffs or win Super Bowls or what they do. But it doesn't mean the idea that the only quarterback you can find who can be a good quarterback in the NFL has to be a top 4 or 5 pick is nonsense. I mean, the ability to evaluate and draft at that position has been shown from the beginning of time that it's as much a crapshoot as anything. Look, 2 quarterbacks were taken ahead of Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, Eli won a couple Super Bowls, but I don't think anybody puts him in his class. Phillip Rivers is a good NFL quarterback. He's never been to a Super Bowl. You look at guys, I mean, we can just go through every guy in the league and, you know, evaluate, you know, where he went and what happened. Eli at the top, Tom Brady in the sixth round. That's all you need to know. Is the position is difficult to evaluate. Guys are coming out of different systems. It makes it even more difficult. Very few guys coming out of pro style systems now. I mean, what's Josh Allen going to be out of Wyoming? You know, look at Colin Kaepernick versus, you know, what he was in the first couple of years in RG3 in the first couple of years to where they are now. Vince Young, another guy. Dave, who's the guy from USC who's in the broadcast booth? Matt Leinart. I mean, the prototypical looks great. Blake Bortles looks great. Blaine Gabbert looked great. Then none of these guys have done anything. So it's just you got to go out. You got to scout well, and you got to hope, but you got to develop well. It's you can find them other than the top 3 picks.
And you know, he writes in here, you know, leverage over the next 2 seasons for these picks, and says, if so, can you name 3 to 4 current players that could be traded that could bring back enough value? Peter, honestly, who are you going to trade that's going to bring back any value? Yeah, you might see this team deal Martavis Bryant maybe during the offseason here, but I mean, what are you going to get for him? You know, a third or fourth at most. I mean, if he has a good second half of the season here, who else are you going to trade? Are you going to trade BJ Finney for a sixth round, a seventh round pick? Are you going to trade? I mean, go.
Yeah, the Steelers. Look, the Steelers aren't in the trade game. Bill Belichick's the only guy who's an active trader. It's not what they do. There's a guy on the fringe. There's a guy here and there. They're not going to trade to get, you know, to get a second. It's just not. Yeah, it's not happening.
All right,
Dave, I got to kind of wrap things up.
Okay,
I just want to ask you about two plays that, and we'll get to more reader emails on Wednesday, along with our guest from the Colts. What'd you think of the Tyreek Hill screen touchdown at the end of the half?
How the hell can you let that happen, man? I mean, yeah. How the hell can you – you could play regular defense and not give up a touchdown on 100 dropbacks probably on 100 Hail Mary attempts. You know, why – I don't see how you let that happen. Inexcusable.
And you know how you have to play that? The mistake the Cowboys defenders made when Hill came down the field is they ran after him. You have to play it like capture the flag. You got to protect your goal line if you're going to play it that way. Don't go running after him and take yourself out of the play. It was just terrible defensive coaching, blah, blah, blah. And what did you think of that Rams play on 4th and 33? 33. You know what it reminded me of? Ray Rice against the Chargers. Was that 4th and 27 for the Ravens in a game that really killed the Steelers that
they converted? It seemed like it was 3rd and 27 or 4th and 27 with Ray Rice. And this one was what, 3rd and 33 or whatnot? Gave up a 40 or 50 yard touchdown. I don't see how that happens. And boy, McAdoo's not long for, is he? I think that whole front office, you're going to see a shake up there. At what point do you sit Eli Manning down to take a look at that Webb kid?
Absolutely. Well, Eli needs two more starts, I guess, to pass his brother to be second on the all time list. So you know when I'm starting the kid Webb is 3 weeks from now.
What happens to Eli after the season? Is he goes to Arizona with Bruce Arians, right?
I heard Booger McFarland today saying, you know, you can't sit him down this year. You know, he's meant too much to the team. This is not – sports are not about what did you do for me in the past. Sports are about what can you do for me this week and how do I make my team better going forward. Loyalty in sports is the paycheck you get. There's no you don't earn playing time because you used to play well. So I'm with you. I don't know what happens to Eli going forward, but yeah, they're an underdog at 0-9 San Francisco this week. The Giants, a 1-point underdog.
All right, we'll get into more questions and we'll talk to hopefully a beat writer on Wednesday. Start exploring the Steelers Colts game, recapping what Mike Tomlin had to say on Tuesday. In the meantime, maybe David will share a reader email, special reader email that we got on Wednesday as well too. Let's see. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar. David, enjoyed it. We'll do this again on Wednesday.
Yeah, and we will get to that email. That's a good one. We'll open the show with that on Wednesday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.